We're waiting to see. I mean, there's still a lot of votes out there to be counted. We feel good about where we are, but I want all the votes to be counted.
The initial count shows Anchorage voters re-electing Ethan Berkowitz as mayor. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, April 4th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the Alaska Supreme Court upholds a ruling that allows independents to run in the Democratic Party primary.
At this point, we're reviewing the decision to determine what impact, if any, it will have on the respective campaigns.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. And by
Raven Alaska. Raven serves Alaskans in over 115 communities across the state. Seasonal spring routes now available to Kotzebue, Anchorage, Dillingham, and more. Information can be found at flyraven.com.
The Alaska Supreme Court has cleared the way for undeclared and nonpartisan candidates to run in the state Democratic Party primary. The court today affirmed a decision by a lower court judge who ruled in favor of the party. The decision would allow Governor Bill Walker to run in the primary if he chooses. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports on what the decision means.
The court case was prompted by the Alaska Democratic Party changing its rules to allow unaffiliated and nonpartisan candidates to run in its primary. The state opposed the change, citing a law that required candidates to be registered members of the party they seek nominations for. Juneau Superior Court Judge Philip Pallenberg ruled in favor of the party. He decided that parties have the right to associate themselves with the candidates of their choice, regardless of their party registration. Alaska Democratic Party Executive Director Jay Parmley says party officials are, quote, thrilled the court issued the ruling quickly, only 6 days after hearing oral arguments.
All we're saying here is that if you're a registered Democrat, or if you are one of these 56% of the state, which is not a member of an organized political party, and you want to run and seek our nomination, you should have that opportunity.
With less than 2 months until the June 1st primary filing deadline, no one has filed for the Democratic primary. Parmley noted that there is widespread interest in whether former U.S. Senator Mark Begich will seek the Democratic nomination. But Parmley was also complimentary toward Walker, who is registered as undeclared.
I continue to believe the governor has navigated a pretty rough terrain over the last 3.5 years and has continued, along with the House democratically led majority, to, on a broad framework, not getting into the weeds, been sort of the adult in the room advocating for a really sound, responsible, comprehensive fiscal policy.
Walker's daughter and campaign spokeswoman, Lindsay Hobson, says the campaign is analyzing the decision.
At this point, we're reviewing the decision to determine what impact, if any, it will have on the respective campaigns. And as of now, there's no decision.
Alaska Republican Party Chairman Tuckerman Babcock says he's pleased with the decision. He says it parallels the principle that parties determine who can vote in primaries.
It makes sense, perfect sense, that you also have a constitutional right as a party to determine who can offer themselves as one of your candidates in your primary.
Babcock says it backs the Republicans' decision to change party rules to bar from the party's primaries any Republicans who caucus with another party. That would include State Representatives Gabrielle Ledoux of Anchorage, Paul Seaton of Homer, and Louise Stutes of Kodiak. State Division of Elections head Josie Banky ruled the change was made too late and violated state law. Babcock says he'll ask Banky to reverse herself based on the new decision, and he says the party will go to court if she doesn't. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan today praised President Trump's trade strategy toward China as a positive and needed course correction. In an emailed press release, Sullivan said China has been stealing intellectual property and subsidizing state-owned businesses for decades. Sullivan says the situation calls for reciprocity. The Trump administration this week announced a 25% import tax on hundreds of Chinese products, such as electronics, medicine, and batteries. Hours later, China announced a tax hike on a list of American goods, including soybeans, cars, and airplanes. In some good news for Alaska, American seafood is not on China's tariff list. Both of Alaska's U.S. senators were critical last month when Trump announced a new tariff on steel and aluminum from China and other countries. Senator Lisa Murkowski said it would add to the cost of a natural gas pipeline from the North Slope. Sullivan signed a letter last month saying the metal tariffs could drive away U.S. allies. The majority of votes cast in Anchorage's municipal election have been tallied, and while some races remain too close to call, Alaska Public Media's Zechariah Hughes reports a clear picture emerged last night on most of the candidates and measures.
Incumbent Mayor Ethan Berkowitz has a sizable lead over his main challenger. A major utility sale drew huge support, and a controversial measure on bathrooms looks likely to be rejected, although by a narrow margin. As the city implements its first vote-by-mail system, only about two-thirds of the total votes cast were tabulated Tuesday night, with more returns expected Wednesday evening. In the mayoral race, Berkowitz leads by about 22 percentage points, a wide margin. Still, he says he's not celebrating yet.
We're waiting to see. I mean, there's still a lot of votes out there to be counted. We feel good about where we are, but I want all the votes to be counted.
Berkowitz says his probable second term will be a continuation of policies he's pursued the last 3 years. His administration has enjoyed an amiable relationship with the city's 11-member assembly, which has leaned gradually more to the left from when Berkowitz first came into office. At her headquarters on election night, challenger Rebecca Logan was also not ready to declare the race over.
Without seeing precinct data, knowing what's still out there to come in, it's hard to really have an opinion.
Logan ran a campaign focused on crime and the economy, taking a more conservative approach than her opponent. While the clerk's office estimates there are about 26,000 ballots left to be counted, by Wednesday, even conservative allies of Logan said it would be unlikely for those outstanding votes to change the preliminary results. Residents overwhelmingly approved the sale of city-run electric utility Municipal Light and Power to Chugach Electric Association by a margin of 2-1. Greenlighting officials to begin negotiating final terms of the deal. Voters also opted for all 7 bonds on the ballot, from school maintenance projects to park and road improvements. In school board races, Dina Mitchell and Elise Snelling have commanding leads, with the contest between Alicia Hild and Tasha Hotch still too close to call, separated by just a few hundred votes. Mitchell, a first-time candidate who's been an advocate for public education with the group Great Alaska Schools, says she wants to make sure programming is protected in Anchorage schools, even as funds diminish.
We also need to make sure that our students who are underachieving are lifted, and it's going to be challenging, again, with the flat funding that we're seeing. It's going to be challenging to make sure that every dollar works as hard as it can.
Proposition 1, an effort led by a conservative group to regulate bathrooms by a person's biological sex at birth rather than self-identified gender, appears to be failing. However, with a margin of less than 4,000 votes, or around 8% of ballots cast so far, the early results are too close to be definitive. The campaign against Prop 1 attracted more than $800,000 worth of contributions, much of it from advocacy groups outside of Alaska, who say the measure would discriminate against transgender residents. Locally, a coalition of groups called Fair Anchorage spent more than a year organizing to defeat the proposition, says campaign manager Katie Ward.
I was surprised by the results and continued to be surprised by how Anchorage voters have stepped up and denied discrimination to coming back into Anchorage, and we hope that the results will hold.
Voter turnout is on track to break a new record, with the clerk's office forecasting more than 76,000 ballots ultimately returned, or around 35% of the city's electorate. Increasing participation was one of the major reasons the city switched to a mail-based voting system. In Anchorage, I'm Zechariah Hughes.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Kodiak looks to increase the potential of its hydroelectric power.
We get to utilize our surplus power The community gets to benefit from a lower cost of heating source, and we get to have cleaner air to boot.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing and exploring on the North Slope and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources. Public media is designed for and made possible by the communities it serves. Monies generated through estate and deferred gifts enable public radio to provide our listeners, you, with the level of programming excellence you've come to expect. It may also reduce income and estate taxes. Consult your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more.
The governor has asked the chairs of both finance committees in the legislature to reallocate $10 million in the budget start bringing the state's 911 system up to date. The money was originally proposed for oil and gas research, but the governor's office said the emergency system is more important. One in four Alaskans don't have access to a standard 911 number, and as KYUK's Teresa Katsourilis reports, the lack of it has been impairing rural residents' ability to reach first responders for years.
If you call 911 in rural Alaska, there's a good chance something will go wrong. Let's say you need help in Aniak, for instance. Commissioner of Public Safety Walt Monaghan attended a meeting in the village last spring.
They said, you know, by the way, sometimes when you dial 911, you get an answering machine. And that floored me.
That doesn't just happen in Aniak. The Department of Public Safety's John Rockwell says he's heard plenty of stories like this. Then there are the communities where 911 just sort of dead ends. Rockwell says that happened to a friend of his when she was visiting a village.
The person she was visiting had an allergic reaction to something, and she went to dial 911, and she got the message, "I'm sorry, but this service is not available in your area."
When that didn't work, the woman's friend managed to gesture to a 10-digit non-emergency number written on the wall. The woman tried to call it.
But unfortunately, she didn't have her contacts in, so she couldn't even read the number by the wall.
In Alaska, 911 runs into trouble in the best of times. In January, KYUK reported that Bethel's 911 system can't track callers' locations if they're on a cell phone. Residents are encouraged to tell police officers exactly where they are if they need help. But if you leave incorporated areas like Bethel for Alaska's rural communities, the problem can get a lot worse. Many communities can't fund their own police departments or dispatch centers. So in villages like Aniak, 911 is redirected to the area's lone Alaska State Trooper. In communities without that level of law enforcement, emergency calls might be directed to the mayor's personal number or the fire chief's. If anything goes wrong with that person's phone, or if that person leaves town, communities can lose their emergency call services. And in many cases, there's only one person available to pick up the calls, which Commissioner Walt Monaghan says poses an obvious problem. Let's say there's a fire or an earthquake.
Even if the VPSO or the trooper responds to the call, what happens when there's a second call? Who answers that?
Monaghan says the Department of Public Safety has a plan to fix this. The solution is a statewide 911 system. A number of rural emergency calls are already redirected to a state trooper dispatch center in Fairbanks. Monaghan is fortifying that center now so that it can take calls from a wider range of rural areas. By June 2018, he says that callers should be able to call 911 anywhere in Alaska. But Monaghan says the Fairbanks Center could become overloaded, and it still wouldn't have the technology it needed to track callers' locations, which in rural Alaska can be a problem.
It gets kind of dicey if you're out there on a river or on a snow machine and you're lost, disoriented, and you dial, and we ask you, where are you? Then you're going to say, well, I'm lost.
On Monday, Governor Walker asked the legislators' finance committee chairs to take $10 million from oil exploration in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge and put it instead into expanding the 911 system. The money would go towards creating a state trooper dispatch center in Anchorage and implementing next-gen technology so that 911 could identify where callers are. Governor Walker says right now, improving rural public safety has to be more urgent than promoting oil drilling on the Arctic coastal plain. In Bethel, I'm Teresa Katsourilis.
The city and borough of Juneau and Canada's Hydro One say they've reached common ground over the future of Juneau's 125-year-old private power company. KTOO's Jacob Resnick reports.
State regulators are reviewing the acquisition of Juneau's power company by Hydro One. Hearings are set to begin later this month over whether the Canadian company is fit, willing, and able to operate Alaska Electric Light and Power. But a 22-page joint agreement filed with the Regulatory Commission of Alaska late Tuesday means those hearings likely won't happen after all. In it, Hydro One pledges 39 binding commitments covering corporate independence for AELNP and assurances over its assets and transparency on how it operates. In return, the city drops its petition to intervene as the sole third party in the hearing that would streamline the acquisition.
Collectively, these commitments are very good for the community, and they assure that the community will continue to see AELNP similar to the way it is now.
Portland, Oregon attorney Kirk Gibson negotiated directly with Hydro One's attorneys on behalf of the city. He said Hydro One's acquisition of AELNP's parent company, Avista of Spokane, is a complicated and expensive deal requiring approval of regulators in five states. One of the commitments states that Juneau's 17,000 ratepayers won't foot that bill.
We know that they're paying more for Avista than it was in its market value. And as an investor, you want to collect those differences. And what it's saying here is they will not get them from AELNP.
Another concern was the future of a state-owned hydroelectric complex that generates most of Juneau's electricity. AELNP has an option to purchase the Snettisham hydroelectric plant once it completes its payments to the state. One of the commitments pledges that none of AELNP's assets could be used by Hydro One as collateral. There were concerns that a piece of publicly financed infrastructure could one day be used as security against a private corporation's debt. Juneau Assemblyman Jesse Keel said that was an important point for the assembly.
They can't use Snettisham or other big generation assets here in Juneau as collateral for loans to do anything outside of Alaska or outside of Juneau without getting separate RCA approval. And that was a big concern. The community talked a lot about the possibility that the assets here in Juneau, including Snettisham, which was built by the federal government, could be pledged against loans elsewhere.
Acquiring Snettisham would also require approval by the RCA. Critics of the Hydro One purchase say they're still looking at the details. Margot Waring, a board member of Renewable Juneau, which advocates for carbon-free energy, said at the very least, this agreement shows it was worth the city and borough of Juneau getting involved.
I really appreciate that CBJ has intervened and that, therefore, they've had a seat at the table and they're able to negotiate a more comprehensive document than the previous iteration was.
The group would be reviewing the document closely for protections to ratepayers and transparency, she added. In a statement, Hydro One Vice President for Corporate Affairs, Ferio Pugliese, called the settlement a positive step that underscores the long-term benefits for AELNP customers, employees, and the community. The settlement also includes a $1 million rate credit over 5 years. AELNP says that would save the average ratepayer about 54 cents a month. In Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
Kodiak is powered nearly 100% by wind and hydropower. Most homes and businesses heat with fuel oil, but the local utility sees a shift to electric. To meet the growing demand, the Kodiak Electric Association is planning a new project to boost the energy potential of Kodiak's hydroelectric reservoir. KMXT's Kayla DeRoche reports the utility is offering an incentive to the borough to make the shift to electric heat.
Kodiak Island Borough Projects Manager Matt Gandell stands in front of two fuel oil boilers that are taller than he is.
This thing is behemoth.
Oh, it's huge. Yeah. We replaced the boilers at Peterson a few years ago. They're probably half of this size. And you get the same kind of efficiency.
Gandell says the typical life of a boiler is between 20 and 30 years. And these ones are pushing 35 years old. He says they'll switch out one of them with an electric boiler in May.
The electric boiler that will be here is more sophisticated than these fuel boilers, so there's different stages of heating. It's easier to control, like a tighter range of temperature. These fuel boilers are basically on or off to a large degree, so it's more energy efficient in that aspect.
The Kodiak Electric Association is paying to install electric boilers in the middle school, high school, and the Kodiak Fisheries Research Center as part of the expansion of its Terra Lake hydroelectric project. The expansion will catch snowmelt and rain and transport it to the Terror Lake Reservoir to increase its energy potential. When it's complete in 2020, the diversion will produce excess power. Instead of letting it go to waste, KA will direct the energy to public buildings. It struck a deal with the borough for a 10% discount on the excess hydropower for at least the first few years of the hydroelectric project expansion. KA President and CEO Darren Scott says the agreement benefits them, the borough, and the school district.
We get to utilize our surplus power. The community gets to benefit from a lower cost of heating source, and we get to have cleaner air to boot.
Scott sees electric heating as the future in Kodiak. He says a lot of new construction uses technology like electric boilers or heat pumps, which are now capable of functioning at even lower temperatures.
You don't have the potential of an oil leak at your house. You don't have as significant a maintenance on the electric systems as you do on the fuel oil systems. And you're hopefully going to be saving money and more consistent costs over time.
Fuel prices rise and fall. And Chris Rose, the executive director of the Renewable Energy Alaska Project in Anchorage, says the market is unpredictable.
We have no control over the price of oil. Some kind of geopolitical event could occur, and all of a sudden oil prices shoot over to $100 a barrel again.
Rose says cities with lower electricity costs like Kodiak are good candidates for the transition to electric heat if the utility can handle the increased demand. KEA's expansion of the hydroelectric facility will help Kodiak do just that in the long run. The diversion should boost the annual hydropower production by about 33 million kilowatt hours, which is roughly 25% more energy. KEA plans to start construction in June. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Kayla DeRoche.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, sustaining Alaska's pipeline for 40 years and counting. And by
Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com.
Join Alaska Public Media TV every week for Think Wednesday, featuring a dynamic lineup of programs exploring the thrilling world of nature, technology, and science. Think Wednesday explores the mysteries of our world and our universe, bringing the most exciting and inspiring stories that provide the answers that curious minds crave. Think Wednesday, every Wednesday beginning at 7 p.m. only on Alaska Public Media TV.
Alaska Seaplanes recently announced they will add a new flight between Juneau and Whitehorse. This is a big deal for travelers in Southeast Alaska because it opens up international travel directly from the capital city, which hasn't existed for some time. KHNS's Daisha Eaton has more.
Alaska Seaplanes General Manager Carl Ramseth says he hopes his company will begin flying to Canada's Yukon Territory soon.
We are very excited about this new route, and we're looking forward to being able to announce the details of the days of the week and the times of day.
Ramseth says the company is still waiting for authority from Transport Canada to receive their Foreign Air Operator Certificate, which will allow Alaska Seaplanes to operate scheduled flights into Whitehorse. Ramseth says the company has been working on the Juneau-Whitehorse route since 2015. Zoe Morrison is a Whitehorse resident who used to live in Juneau and travels back and forth for recreation.
People from Juneau love going to Whitehorse, and people from Whitehorse love going to Juneau.
She usually drives to Skagway, then takes the ferry, but she says she's really looking forward to the time-saving flight.
I'm very excited about it. It's a two-hour drive from Whitehorse to Skagway, and then it's a seven-hour ferry trip, so it takes all day. And it is lovely traveling by ferry, but the flight, I understand it's going to be 45 minutes long. It's going to really change your ability to travel to one of the communities for a long weekend.
Morrison is betting flying will be around the same price as driving, then taking the ferry. Passengers will travel the 169 air miles aboard a Pilatus PC-12, which seats nine. The Swiss-built single-engine turboprop plane is fully pressurized and can travel 300 miles per hour and climb 2,000 feet per minute. It can fly at altitudes close to 30,000 feet, and the flight also improves air travel times and costs between Anchorage and Whitehorse. Currently, passengers have to fly from Anchorage to Vancouver, BC, then on to Whitehorse and vice versa. In Haines, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Right about now, you may be wondering when the snow is finally going to disappear. Climatologist Brian Bretschneider with our Ask a Climatologist segment can help answer that question. He says melt out is about right on schedule for most places around the state. That's important because an early melt-out date can make for an especially bad wildfire season. Bretschneider told Energy Desk editor Annie Feit, the spring sun quickly melts the snow.
Here in Anchorage, our typical date is April 12th, Fairbanks about 10 days later, April 22nd. And then as you go, you know, farther north, say Nome and Kotzebue, even McGrath, we're going to go into the month of May. McGrath, May 1st, Kotzebue, May 18th, Nome, May 9th. And then farther south, down in, say, Juneau and even down the southeast, our continuous snowpack is much more variable. So it's a harder concept to tie down for places where the snowpack is less continuous.
But for the rest of the state, is it pretty standard every year or does it vary a lot?
It can vary quite a bit. So there's a lot of factors that go into it. Of course, how much snow you get throughout the winter, but most importantly is how much snow falls at the end of the winter and during the melt season. So once our sun angle gets pretty high up in the sky, the snow melts really fast, even with cold temperatures. In fact, once you get to about April 10th or so, snow depth decreases by like 2 or 3 inches a day. So it goes fast.
And what does that date, that snow melt-off date, mean for climate?
So it's really important for a number of reasons. Our plants, our trees, they can't start their green-up process until that snow is gone. Our ground frost can't start to thaw out until that snow is gone. And then with a warming climate, you know, we're actually seeing that snow melt-out date move a little bit earlier in the season. And this is important because this is also our driest time of the year. April is the driest month of the year in Alaska. May is the second driest month of the year. And if you melt that snow out earlier, you're actually going to really increase your wildfire risk. Because you're going to have all this vegetation that hasn't greened out yet. It's very dry, lots of sunlight. And so it's really a concern long-term about a fire acreage early in the season.
Brian Bretschneider is a climatologist based in Anchorage. He checks in with Alaska's Energy Desk each week as part of a regular look at climate change in the state. If you have a climate-related question, send an email to akenergydesk@alaskapublic.org. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org/news. We had reports tonight from Andrew Kitchenman and Jacob Resnick in Juneau, Zachariah Hughes and Annie Feit in Anchorage, Teresa Katsarilis in Bethel, Kayla DeRoche in Kodiak, and Dacia Eaton in Haines. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
First National Bank Alaska, offering online and mobile services to help Alaskans and their businesses bank on the go. Learn how experience and knowledge make the difference at fnbalaska.com.
Matson, committed to the communities it serves, building on 130 years of reliable lifeline cargo transportation to the Pacific and over 50 years of service to the communities in Alaska. Learn more at matson.com. Raven Alaska. Raven serves Alaskans in over 115 communities across the state. Seasonal spring routes now available to Kotzebue, Anchorage, Dillingham, and more. Information can be found at flyraven.com. Each semester, undergraduate students at UAA are learning through hands-on research experiences that take them outside the classroom. Working alongside faculty and professionals in the field, students have used their research to begin exciting careers, to secure patents for their inventions, and to earn national academic accolades. Amazing stories are being written every day at UAA. More at uaa.alaska.edu/admissions. This message sponsored by UAA.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.